once again from IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie Show featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network analyst, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Dix, I see you have a Trimino in your hand.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Which flavor do you have?
I'm typically an orchard guy, but for some reason I gravitated toward the citrus. So I had a coconut pineapple last week on the special delivery by Josh Davey.
Oh, that was nice. He was really thinking about us.
Yeah. And now I've got citrus, and I'm really, really enjoying it. I felt like I could use a little bit of a little zing.
That picked me up. Yeah. People were buzzing in the office today.
Well, that's what I was. So I always enjoy coming in.
Hold on.
There you go. Jeez, I want to say you need to do those little wrist curls or something.
I was going for a maximum sound effect.
I got you. So when you try to,
that's a strawberry lemonade.
Yeah, strawberry. Is it good?
Yeah, it's delicious.
You like that?
Yeah, it's nice.
Always great coming into the Inside Lacrosse offices. I enjoy my weekly visits, catching up with everybody. It's great to stand out in the, what do you call that, the work area, workspace, lobby area?
We're undergoing some renovations right now.
The place looks great.
So we have our media room, yeah. our war room, sort of. There's a big little conference table, actually, with three TVs set up around it for watching games and doing some work out there. But we took some other stuff out. There were some cubicles that we have removed, and we're making that sort of like an active photo shoot area, studio space that
great.
We can take advantage of a lot better than
so much more space. There's a lot more room for activities now.
Yeah, you could do face-offs out there.
You could do aerobics and things like that. Don't you want that movie, Step Brothers?
We could. We could get, what's that guy's name?
Richard Simmons?
Yeah, Richard Simmons. No, the young guy who...
John Bastow?
Who does the body pump videos or... what's his name?
Adrian Zemed?
Oh, my God. How are you dating yourself, Richard Simmons, Adrian Zemed? What is his name?
Billy Blanks?
Even he, you're dating yourself. Oh, I can't think of the guy's name.
Sorry, I'm not up on my current aerobic instructors in the year 2018. My bad.
I gotta look it up.
Why don't you tap your Zumba instructor? I know you have a Zumba instructor at, where do you go? Supreme Fitness out
Supreme
in Columbia?
Sports Club. Actually, my wife made me go to one of those once.
A Zumba class?
I think they call it Zumba.
Zumba. How was it?
It was hard. It was a lot harder than you think. Well, considering I never do that kind of stuff, I'm kind of like a jogging guy.
Were you the only dude in the class?
No, there were about 300 people in the class.
What?
It was one of those Saturday morning things. I felt like I was almost part of a cult. It was really strange.
Right.
There weren't many guys, though, that's for sure.
Right. But in the meantime, I think that, you know, great conversation today as always. I love coming in and seeing everybody catching up. But I think the Trimino has first of all, it's a gorgeous day in Baltimore, about 67 degrees.
Insanity, Sean T.
What? Who is that?
This dude.
Let me see.
Insanity was like a big thing a few years
ago.
Oh,
I've seen that
now
guy.
They have
he's like an infomercial guy, right?
Yeah. But yeah, sure. I remember someone gave me his like workout DVDs or tapes, whatever. And I was doing it, and there he goes, okay, that's the warm up. <It's> like, that was a 25-minute warm up. I'm dead. I can't do anymore.
And this is in your house?
Yeah, I was doing it in my basement.
Oh, that would have been great.
Jumping up, like hitting like a.
I wish I would have had a camera on that, watching D-Fly work out in his basement.
This was years ago.
Sweating to the
oldest. Yeah, Sean T.
Sean T. But wait, there's more. If you call in the next 5 minutes, Sean T will include one of his own towels with his actual sweat on it.
Gotta get this guy.
Did you ever do that when you were a kid? Did you ever order things? So back in the day...
No, the Flynns didn't do anything like that.
Are you serious?
Never.
So back in the day, guys that I grew up with in our neighborhood... I remember one time in particular. Do you remember the infomercial for a guy, Zamfir, master of the pan flute? It was just this guy who would play the pan flute. And no. We used to sit, and we would watch TV together. We'd sit and laugh. Well, lo and behold, one day, there's a ring at the doorbell. And I can't remember who was delivering it, but it was a COD for Zamfir, master of the pan flute.
That's funny.
And my parents were hot. They were like, who ordered? What the hell is it? What's a Zimfer?
COD, too.
So...
You can't do cash on delivery anymore.
You would call an 800 number, and you would just give your address, your quote-unquote name and ask for COD. And it would get delivered within a day or two. So I got my buddies back. I ordered one of them, Boxcar Willie. Remember Boxcar Willie?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And then
Conway Twitty.
And then Slim Whitman. Slim Whitman was the other CD, or I don't even know if it was CDs back then. Maybe it was cassettes.
Cassette. Eight tracks.
Cassette. So COD was the best. COD. I tell you, you can't do that anymore. You can't phony phone call people anymore.
No, no one picks up.
One Star 69 came on. I remember, never forget, over a buddy's house one night, and he had the if you used to subscribe to Sports Illustrated, their gift was the sneaker phone. Do you remember the Sports Illustrated sneaker phone? So we would call people, and it was the, well, this is the electric company. Is your refrigerator running? Well, yeah, it is. Well, you better go catch it. Hee hee. And then you hang up. Well, I remember we did that one night, and the phone rang back. So we're like, you know, my friend answered, hello. Did you just call this number? Whatever. He's like, what? And he's like, Star 69. That was like the advent of Star 69. Well, now you go to prison if you funny phone calls. They've got you on surveillance and a drone and everything. So, but the Flynns never did anything like that.
No way. We would have been killed if we. I didn't think like that. I didn't want stuff when I was a kid.
It's not that I wanted. Do you think I wanted Zamfir?
I don't know. It's hard to describe. Flute. It's like I just didn't. I was the opposite of materialistic.
You weren't,
I still am to some extent. Like I just didn't want.
But how does that do?
Because I knew I wouldn't get them. So I didn't hope for things.
What are you talking about? I'm talking about playing pranks on people. When you order them things COD and have it sent to their house, and it's even better if you can sit there. You happen to catch the UPS truck drive up and look at the exasperated expressions on the face. You never did anything like that?
I don't think so.
Prank stuff?
No, not like that.
Did you ever ring and run when you were a kid?
Of course we did things like that.
So, but you never ordered like COD for somebody? Really?
No, and I don't know anyone who did.
I don't understand how that has to be. You know somebody now.
I do. Of course you did.
you never did anything like that.
Oh.
I don't understand how this is materialistic, though. I think we're all two different things.
Yeah, I think we're thinking of different things. Like, when I would watch those kind of things, or even commercials on TV, I didn't say, I need to have that.
No,
just said, there are other people who have that, and I won't have something like that.
No, you watch
it. I'm one of six kids, man. My mom and dad are teachers and coaches. And
you watch it, and you're like, oh, you know, Dan Flynn's getting the box set of Boxcar Willie. And it's not that you wanted it. Nobody wanted Boxcar Willie. Who listened to Boxcar Willie? Who listened to Slim Whitman? Jim Nabors, Gomer Pyle. His record collection would be up on, you know, WBFF 45. Yeah, it wasn't Fox 45 back then. It was WBFF Channel 45, you know, in the evening. And you'd go ahead and...
I guess that's how you bought music back then, you know? Like,
oh, yeah. Either that or you joined... They would, Columbia House. Remember Columbia House?
Yeah,
you would,
definitely.
Or you'd go to...
11 CDs for a penny.
Yeah. And then you just had to buy six CDs over the next year at the regular club.
Who could turn that down? What a great deal.
But every CD was $35.
Yeah, it was. They got you back on that one.
You're like, wait a minute. Slippery When Wet came out in 1988. It's now 19.
Yeah, I'm not paying $19.95 for this.
Wait a minute. It's the year like 1995. Why am I paying $30 for Slippery When Wet from Bon Jovi? I'm trying to think. What else? Well, Sam Goody. Sam Goody was the music.
Sam Goody got it.
Kemp Mill Music was another record store.
In Newark, Delaware, we had Rainbow Records.
Rainbow Records, okay. Harmony Hut was the precursor to Sam Goody in the Security Square Mall off of Security Boulevard. That was the mall when I grew up, Security Square Mall.
Okay,
makes
sense.
Where we went.
Not far from you.
Living in Catonsville. And, Harmony Hut. Was the record store, and then they were replaced by Sam Goody. So, third base sings about third Sam Goody.
Oh, right? I love third base. MC Search.
Pop goes the weasel. Pop pop go. But there's a Sam Goody hook in there somewhere. So,
all right. So this is a lacrosse podcast.
I know. It's just fun to talk about.
It is, man.
Stuff.
There were some great games this weekend, Dix.
Yeah, big time.
I know you saw a couple of crazy games in the Big Ten, and we were specifically paying attention to the rivalry. Mm-hmm. Maryland gets an 8-7 win over the Blue Jays in triple overtime. When I watched this, I said after it was over, this was the best game that I've seen all season long. A lot of times when you see games where fairly low scoring, you know, they held Connor Kelly and Jared Bernhardt
No goals.
Each had an assist late in the game. It's sloppy offense. Maybe it's turnovers. This was not that. This was great defense, great game plans, excellent goaltending, and just good play all around. They just couldn't get it in the net. It was a fantastic game to watch.
And I didn't get to watch it because I was broadcasting up at Michigan Penn State, but I watched the replay, and, man, it was legit. And actually, after the women's game that I called Michigan Penn State, I had to do some post-game activities, and they split-screened it for me. They had the Rutgers-Ohio State men's game and then the conclusion of the Hopkins-Maryland game. Tremendous crowd. Wow. I haven't seen a crowd like that at Hopkins, I want to say, since the late 80s when Syracuse used to come for the first game of the year, early March, and people were 2, 3, 4 deep around the perimeter of Homewood Field.
In the end zone, there were 10 people deep in the end zone.
So remember,
watching the game, not like walking back and forth, getting something to eat. This was watching the game.
Remember Homewood Field, the permanent structure has always been behind the benches.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Conrad Gebline stands.
Yes. And then across the field, they used to put up temporary bleachers. Mm-hmm. And behind each goal, they used to put up temporary bleachers as well. So you didn't have that back then.
Yeah, smaller one on the scoreboard side.
Yeah.
And the one where the quarter center is now would be up pretty higher.
So that's why you didn't have, back in the day, you oftentimes didn't have people standing behind the nets because they could sit. But I know exactly what you're saying. But the ring around the fence, I mean, it was just reminiscent of the 80s when Syracuse used to come. The 89 game in particular, I remember going to that game. And crazy. Incredible atmosphere. But to your point, Hopkins played well enough to win that game. They did. Maryland just made one more play.
7-5. Yeah. The Blue Jays were leading in the fourth quarter with about 5 minutes left. And they had an EMO and couldn't convert. I had the feeling, at least, that Hopkins wasn't going to score again.
Yeah.
When Maryland scored to make it 7-6, I said to my buddy I was watching the game, I was like, okay, look, they're either going to win 7-6 or they're going to lose 8-7. But the Jays aren't scoring again. And they didn't.
Unfortunately, you were right. You were right. And things that stood out to me in this game, firstly, for Maryland, when you can win a game like that in the conference at your arch rival on their homecoming in front of 10,000-plus, there was a ton of red in those stands, though. There was a ton.
Sure.
Particularly behind
Terps,
the Maryland bench.
The Terps travel.
But when you can hold Bernhardt and Kelly to zero goals combined on 0-for-23, 24 shooting and still win, that's pretty good. That's been a criticism of Maryland. Can they win when those guys don't, quote-unquote, produce? And I think the only production that you can really characterize in this game is on the score sheet, because their presence alone really made Hopkins play the way that they played, which was, I thought they played great defense. I was a little, how about Owen Caldwell on Connor Kelly? Did a fantastic job. There were some people saying that he couldn't cover him. No, he did. He did a great job. He had help. Kelly's assist to Drew Snyder in the fourth quarter was beautiful. A little slip pick that he went behind. And then Patrick Foley, not only I thought got the better of the matchup with Jared Bernhardt, but he won two or three possessions by running shots out of bounds. And I think it was smart, because when Connor Kelly sweeps across a goal, sticking his right hand and kind of dips toward the alley, he is shooting. And that's what he did, and Foley was just running to the end line. So terrific job by the Hopkins defense. But Maryland, Dan Morris, it's not how many saves he makes, it's when he makes them. And he made two saves in the second overtime that were significant. How about that ground ball by Joel Tinney? Reaching over top of I think it was Austin Henningsen, the faceoff man for Maryland, and just getting it and came down, got a shot off. Just the placement wasn't there. If he'd have gone far post, I think we'd be having a different conversation in terms of who won this game. But great game by both teams. Fantastic, incredible atmosphere. I mean, it's cliche, but that's what college lacrosse is all about, you know, in late April and a homecoming game at Hopkins. And that's what I was talking about last week. We were talking about this rivalry, talking about this game, how much better it is when it's
at home. It just seems like there's more energy when it's at home.
Because it's a smaller venue, and 10,000 people in Bird Stadium, is the place is still a quarter full in the lower bowl. Let's not even talk about the upper decks. And you also have the skyboxes and the luxury suites, or the suites at Maryland, which house a ton of fans, but they're not involved. You know, you can't hear them or see them on a broadcast. So excellent job by both teams, and a lot of excitement as they both qualify for the Big Ten tournament. They were already qualified, but now you look at the numbers, and you know, you got Hopkins. I think they're in the NCAA tournament.
No matter what happens.
Even with a loss to Ohio State on Thursday night, first round of the Big Ten tournament. RPI currently of 7 wins over Cuse, Virginia, Rutgers, Ohio State. But, you know, hey, that's not gospel by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I think you're right.
And I think Maryland's in as well.
I think they're safe. Yeah. And if they get a W on Thursday against Ohio State, they're in for sure. Maryland is now playing maybe for the top seed overall if they can win out.
Who can beat Maryland in the Big Ten tournament? They're the 2-time Big Ten tournament champions, defending champions.
So, Dix, what I want to do is we'll cover some of these games, but as we look ahead, we'll look at all the sort of the conference tournament previews coming up later in the show. So let's stick to the games that just happened.
Well, let's just wrap up the Big Ten real quick. Let me just interrupt you.
Sure.
So Michigan-Penn State was a game, 11 a.m., and I called that game with Joe Beninati, and it was Penn State was sitting pretty. All they had to do was win against a team in Michigan that hadn't won a Big Ten game since the first week of Big Ten play in 2015, where the Wolverines beat Rutgers. Second week. And they were down 5-3 at half, came back to lead 7-5 at the end of three. And then they scored what was a go-ahead goal with about, 40-some-odd seconds left. Then Michigan wins the ensuing faceoff, comes down, calls a timeout. Out of the timeout, they score a way too easy of a goal, and then they win it in overtime. So basically, like, you know, Penn State's season ended within the span of, like, 60 seconds. Crazy when you think about it. Hats off to Michigan. I feel for Penn State. They were riding high 2 weeks ago with the win over Johns Hopkins, their first in program history, really a high watermark as well. And then they lose to Rutgers, and they lose to Michigan, and for all intents and purposes, I think their season's over because they did not qualify for the Big Ten tournament. With that loss, Rutgers automatically became eligible and claimed a spot, and Penn State needed Rutgers to beat Ohio State to get into the Big Ten tournament, and Ohio State won at home against Rutgers to complete their transformation, kind of the opposite of Penn State. A couple weeks ago, they were 0-2.
Yeah, I thought we could leave them for dead.
Yeah, 0-2. Well, 5-6-game losing streak. Hadn't won since early March, March 3rd, March 4th. Beat Michigan 8-5, upset Maryland 12-10. Then they defend their home turf and beat Rutgers. They're in. They're dangerous. They're hot. It's just I think it speaks to the depth of talent of the Big Ten conference, as well as just the crazy nature of late season lacrosse.
Yeah, and a real heartbreaker for Penn State.
Big time.
They join about half of the teams, or more than half the teams, so their season's over. You know, there's a handful of teams that really thought that they might still be playing lacrosse, and in the blink of an eye, in their conference tournament or the last week of the season, it ends for them.
I mean, you know, you never want to say never. I think they're a long shot to make the tournament. But Penn State's 8-6, RPI currently of 18. They've got wins over Penn, Ohio State, and Hopkins. So if Penn can make a run in the Ivy,
yeah, they need help.
And then if Ohio State or Hopkins can win the Big Ten, their numbers will be better. But look at it. If Penn wins in the Ivy, that takes away an at-large berth because Yale is getting in, even if they don't win the I believe Yale's getting in, even if they don't win the Ivy League championship. And then Ohio State and Hopkins, let's say Ohio State goes and wins. Now, all of a sudden, the Big Ten is at least, a three-bid conference. Could potentially be four with Rutgers out there, so depending upon how the Scarlet Knights do this weekend. So a lot of good stuff.
Another league that will have multiple bids, Dix, is the ACC. Similar to Ohio State, I thought a few weeks ago Notre Dame's season was on the brink
in
of
the
disaster.
Gutter. Yeah,
and here they come back, find an offense, and win two games easily to take home the ACC championship.
Isn't it crazy? We're talking about a Notre Dame team that lost 8-2 against Duke. Two goals in 60 minutes of lacrosse. Now, I know they're without Gleason, they're without Costabile. Say what you will. But then they barely beat Marquette to keep their season alive. They lose to Marquette.
They're done.
I mean,
well, not
necessarily done, but, you know, geez.
Not looking good.
Yeah. So now all of a sudden, I mean, you've got a Notre Dame team that's, there's no IQ in the ACC, but they're going, right? And this could be a four-bid conference. Could be. Notre Dame, Duke's in, and then you got Virginia.
Notre Dame has the number two RPI in the country.
Yeah, number two RPI. Duke's got the number five RPI, wins over Denver, Loyola, Notre Dame, and Virginia. Virginia now, with the win over Syracuse.
It's number nine in the RPI.
Number nine RPI. They've beaten Loyola, and then Syracuse. So Virginia's yesterday, even though they got thumped by Notre Dame, their stock rose because Loyola wins the Patriot, and then Notre Dame, they have a win over Notre Dame previous. So even though they get crushed by 10 goals, their stock rises.
It is funny how that works. Syracuse is now the number 12 RPI team. The team that went 4-0 in the regular season and was the number one seed in the ACC tournament is on the bubble now.
And they could be the most at risk to not get into the tournament from the ACC of those four schools. RPI of 12. But they got wins over Virginia, Duke, and Notre Dame. So their stock rose a little bit yesterday with Notre Dame winning the ACC. Mm-hmm. They still have a regular season game against Colgate. So if they lose to the Raiders, forget it. They're toast. If they win, they keep their hopes alive.
And also last week we talked about the Patriot League and how there could be multiple bids for the Patriot League. And that
what a difference a week makes.
That blew up on Tuesday. When Bucknell lost, who had been playing great lacrosse, lost heartbreaker to Boston University. And then Navy lost to Lehigh in the Patriot League semifinals on Friday.
It's just, you think you know something and you think you see things trending. I had Bucknell as high as 6 last week in my Maverick media poll. And they, similar to Penn State, they're at home. They know what they have to do. I would say that Bucknell was probably in maybe a better spot than Penn State in terms of at-large possibilities. They were already in. Obviously, this is a conference tournament game. Had Penn State won, they would have gotten a spot in the Big Ten tournament. But now Bucknell, to lose to BU, man, that hurts. RPI of 14, but they've got two ginormous wins against Loyola and Yale. They're going to be interesting to watch on Selection Sunday, and a lot of other pieces have to fall into place. But Navy, I think, for all intents and purposes, is done. 9-5 record, RPI is 17, wins over Bucknell and Syracuse. And now it's Loyola. I think Loyola obviously gets the AQ from the Patriot League, but this is a two-bid conference at best, barring not a lot of bid stealers out there on the final weekend of the regular season in these conference tournaments.
Yeah, those are two huge wins, man, especially if Loyola can slide up into, they're at number 6 in RPI, if they slide up to 5 somehow. Mm-hmm. I mean, Albany could conceivably win the America East and slip in the RPI because of the strength of the teams that they're playing to win that from 4 to 6, say, right. And Loyola would slide up a little bit. Could be very interesting for Bucknell.
Yeah.
Hey, Dix, I want to get your thoughts on a couple other games, too. In the NEC, St. Joe's beat Robert Morris 8-7. Hawks just keep on winning, get the top seed in the NEC.
They're the favorites right now. St. Joe's are the favorites, and that's a one big conference. Bobby Moe's been a great story all year, but St. Joe's wins that game, and it's their conference to lose. And should they get upset in the Northeast Conference, whether it's by Bryant, I should say if an upset winner, you know, other than St. Joe's wins that conference tournament, whether it's Bryant, whether it's Robert Morris, it's going to be a one-bid league.
Yeah. In the Ivy League was a big shocker. Princeton 14, Cornell 8. It's Cornell's worst loss of the season.
Who saw that coming?
Not me.
I mean, no one saw that coming. Cornell, along with Bucknell, probably the two hottest teams in the country, right?
Yeah.
Outside of Yale dominating Albany, but let's remember Bucknell beat Yale just a few short weeks ago. What, 3 weeks ago, maybe? You know, how can you explain it?
Keith did not score a point.
None, and he got defended by a no-name defender that no one's heard of before. Wow, I think Princeton's been so inconsistent this year. So inconsistent. Tremendous offensive firepower. Defensively, they've struggled. You know, goaltending's been okay, but not fantastic. And to come out and turn in this type of defensive performance against Jeff Teat, I mean, Teat's in a lot of Tewaratong conversations right now. Well-deserved Tewaratong conversations. I think it takes a little bit of luster off of the Ivy League tournament this weekend, but I think it adds more drama a little bit. You know, can Cornell be a team? Can they rebound from this? Because everybody's saying Yale Cornell for the championship in the Ivy League, myself included. It's the only team at Yale didn't double up in the Ivies this year. I think it takes a little bit of luster off of it, but I don't think it takes any away any intrigue. Can Cornell rebound and challenge Yale for the Ivy League championship? And Penn is a team that's still hanging around. You know, 7-7, RPI of 11, wins over Duke and Bucknell. But if Penn loses in the semifinals, I believe they play Yale, right?
Penn plays Yale. Brown plays Cornell.
Right. So a loss to Yale ends the Quaker season and takes them out of the mix entirely.
What's fascinating about the Ivy League tournament is that Yale is in the tournament. They're going to play in the NCAA tournament. The other teams now, Cornell, put themselves back on the bubble. To be assured of a berth, you got to win the Ivy League tournament. So a lot of motivation there. Not that just winning the tournament's not enough usually, but extra motivation for the other three teams besides Yale.
Their RPI took a hit big time. They're now down RPI of 16, wins though over Penn State, Syracuse, and Penn. But again, those are three teams right now that are, man, they're like, you know, they're shaking on the bubble big time.
Jeff Teague only had one shot in that game.
Wow.
I wonder if he...
I didn't see any video of it.
Yeah,
I just saw
if he came out of that game or not.
Yeah, I have to take a peek.
Dix, it's time for our Trimino spot.
Let's do it.
As if these guys need more love from us. But, oh, I see you're pointing to some...
They got us some swag. Gear. They got us gear.
Yeah, they sent us some swag, some Trimino hats. Yeah. Trimino water bottle.
Right.
Have one of those if you want it. And then, of course,
product. This is the coup de grace.
I'm going to have a little before I do this.
Go ahead. You need to be hydrated. You need to be nourished. You need to be refreshed. And this is the stuff that will do it for you. Can't thank our friends at Trimino.
This is
going to
be
enough.
the best read ever. Watch
okay,
this.
Let's go.
Trimino, protein-infused water. Has 7 grams of whey protein and essential B vitamins to fuel your game. No sugars, no carbs, and only 28 calories. Trimino is ideal before, during, or after your workout or podcast. And it tastes great. Comes in 7 delicious flavors, including 3 new ones, citrus, orchard, and raspberry limeade. You can grab a case at CVS, your local retailer, Amazon.com, and even Trimino was spotted at the Wine Merchant.
Really?
Josh Davey saw... got a Trimino at the Wine Merchant the other day.
Wow.
He was very excited about
that. He got the Trimino to wash down his bomber sandwich.
Trimino increases energy and endurance and even curbs your appetite so you can play hard, not hungry. Protein has never tasted so good.
That was a pretty good read. I have to give it to you. That was a good read.
Thank you. All right, let's get to the Maverick Media Poll. As we said, Notre Dame's the big riser, up 10 spots. Bucknell falls 5 spots out of the top 10. But let's say hello to the St. Joe's Hawks.
Hello.
Number 20 this week in the Maverick Media Poll. First time ever being ranked in the poll.
Is that right?
I believe so.
I've had them ranked the last 3 weeks.
In your poll.
Yeah. Like around 20. Around 20. You guys are jerks.
Well, congratulations. Well, number 1 is Yale. They had an easy win over Harvard. Man, Harvard looked bad, too. Look bad. They had 5 shots on goal in the first half, I think. Maryland moves up to number 2. Denver is number 3. They had a 7-4 win over Marquette, and they will turn around and play them again on Thursday in the Big East tournament.
That's always been, what's that, Denver-Marquette, right? Yeah. That's when the Golden Eagles have beaten Denver 2 times over the last 2 years in the Big East tournament, right?
Yeah.
Watch out. Watch out, Pius.
Do you think the Golden Eagles were just laying low, didn't show anything, played their backups? We don't care what happens now.
They did the rope-a-dope. Yeah, they did the Week 17 NFL thing. Rested all the starters, put in a fake offense. It's interesting. If you're Denver, you don't want to think too hard about it. You want to be aware that this team has beaten you twice in the last 2 Big East tournaments, but you don't want it to be... You know, like a weight around your neck. You don't want it to weigh you down to the point where you're psyched out.
You're in your own head.
Yeah. So I'm sure Bill Tierney and his coaching staff will do a terrific job this week getting them mentally prepared to play.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
Albany is number 4. They had a 16-6 win over Hartford. Connor Fields played. Nice to see him back
out
there.
That's good news.
He had a goal and 4 assists in his return.
Yeah.
Duke's number 5. Loyola's number 6. Hopkins stays steady at number 7. Notre Dame, as I mentioned, went from 18 all the way back into the top 10, is now number 8. Mm. Cornell hangs in there. They're number 9. Virginia moves up to number 10 in this week's poll. Who do you got, Dix?
Yale, number 1. I move Maryland up to number 2. I know it's typically, it's against my nature to drop a team that doesn't lose, but I just, you know, that win at Homewood Field, the way they did it, impressed me. So I've got Maryland 2, Denver 3, Albany shoots up to 4. That's the funny thing about, once you got to like 8, it seemed like teams that were ranked last week between 8 and 14 all lost this week. You know, Cornell, Penn State,
Syracuse.
Syracuse was in there. Who else?
Bucknell.
Bucknell was 6 for
me.
Oh,
you had them.
Bucknell's out of the top 10, my top 10 now. But yeah,
you have Navy.
Navy was up in that neighborhood. I'm trying to remember last night doing the voting.
Week makes a big difference.
Big time. So Yale 1, Maryland 2, Denver 3, Albany 4, Loyola 5. I got Notre Dame at number 6. I got to be honest with you. But that was where Bucknell was last week. So the six slot in Mark Dixon's Maverick media poll could be a slippery slope. Duke, number 7. Hopkins, 8. I got Ohio State in my top 10.
Really?
What they've done over the last couple weeks is nothing short of remarkable. To beat the defending national champions, defending Big Ten champions on their home turf, 12-10, and then to be able to manage the emotion and know that they needed to win, you know, in a must-win situation. Granted, it was at the shoe, at home, but the way they took care of business. So I've got Ohio State number 9, and then I've got a little bit of a tie for number 10. I got Virginia and Rutgers at 10. So really, it's like a top 11, but I couldn't. You know, Virginia, you got to give them credit for that Syracuse loss, but boy, did they look pedestrian in that loss to Notre Dame in the championship game of the ACCs.
We set some cool gear out there, Dix, that we were looking at.
You got some nifty items here inside lacrosse.
Really cool stuff that we're doing a photo shoot for one of the manufacturers that's doing some
really?
Really cool uniforms and shoes that we saw for some of the world game
nice.
Teams, FIL, world
you need,
championships.
You need a model for that? I'm available.
There's some sweet stuff out there.
It is.
But you know where else you can find sweet stuff? Sideline Swap. It's where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves up to 70% off. Or snag hard-to-find college gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to sidelineswap.com. That's SIDELINESWAP.com. Sidelineswap.com. Or download Sideline Swap iPhone app today. We got a huge week ahead.
Big, 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 big.
Now, I know you're doing the Big Ten championships. Will you stay out there? You'll go out on for the games on Thursday and just stay out
we'll stay.
In Michigan?
We're in Ann Arbor. Yep. Thursday night, first semifinal, 5 o'clock. Is Maryland versus Rutgers, a replay of an 11-10 victory by the Terps a couple weeks ago in College Park. Rutgers has not beaten Maryland since 1980, and they haven't beaten them since they've joined the Big Ten. 7:30, Hopkins, Ohio State, a replay of last year's semifinal game won by the Buckeyes. Hopkins won in Baltimore a few weeks ago, 13-10, and this should be a really, really, this should be a very, very good game. Two teams. Hopkins obviously smarting a little bit after triple overtime loss to Maryland, but can they replicate that defensive effort? You know, can they notch it up? And how they do faceoffs against Ohio State? Inacio for the Buckeyes has been on fire as of late, and getting them more possessions means they can dictate the tempo, play the style game that they want to play. So we got two fantastic games on tap Thursday night, Big Ten Network.
One thing we didn't mention on the recap of the rivalry was that Shaq Stanwyck returned to action after being out with an sort of undisclosed rib injury.
Rib, back.
Not knowing how long he might be out for. It was nice to see him out on the field again. And Connor Kelly got banged up a little bit in that game.
Yeah.
You think he's fine?
He looked good. I mean, he was hobbled a little bit in the second half, grabbing his hand. He was limping at one point. It's a thing. And when you shorten your bench, Maryland, they don't really run a second midfield all that often, if at all. And, you know, we're talking about here in the Baltimore area, temperatures by the end of the week are going to be in the 90s. I haven't looked at the weather forecast for Ann Arbor just yet, but
has it stopped snowing yet?
I hope so.
The big thaw come.
I tell you, the last two Big Ten tournaments in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins, 2 years ago, and then last year at Ohio State, we've been freezing, even in Baltimore. You know, first week in May, and it's 45 degrees and windy. So hopefully we'll get some good weather out there.
While Dix is out in Ann Arbor this weekend, there will be six other conference tournaments that kick off on Thursday night, and one more that starts on Friday. The Ivy League will be the only one that goes Friday, Sunday. Most of the other leagues go Thursday, Saturday format. So let's whip around the other conference tournaments and look at who's playing who and what some of the predictions might be. So in the NEC, they started off on Thursday afternoon, I believe. Well, maybe that's the MAC. But St. Joe's plays Sacred.
Which is it, the neck or the MAC?
St. Joe's plays Sacred Heart at 1 o'clock on Thursday.
All right.
And then in the other game, Bryant will play Robert Morris. That 2-3 seed game should be really good. St. Joe's is playing at home. I'll take the Hawks for the NEC AQ.
Okay. You want a prediction out of me?
Sure.
Didn't I just say St. Joe's is the favorite like two segments ago? Can we repeat myself?
Okay. In the MAC, they also kick off early, I think like noon on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Monmouth plays Detroit Mercy, and Quinnipiac plays Canisius.
I haven't followed that league a ton this year. Monmouth was defending national champions, but...
conference champions.
I'm sorry. Yeah, defending conference champions, but I think... I
believe it's in New Jersey.
Quinnipiac is the number one seed, right?
Quinnipiac's number one
seed. Yeah, so, you know, who knows? We'll see.
I'm going to take Monmouth.
Are you?
I'm going to pick Monmouth.
Good for you.
America East, Albany plays UMass Lowell. Stony Brook will play for
UMass
Mutz.
Lowell in only a few years of existence to get to the conference tournament. Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. Pretty nice accomplishment.
Yeah. Albany got to win that, right?
You would imagine. You would imagine. Man, that would really not be good for a lot of these.
Any bubble teams.
Bubbles. Because Albany's going. I think they're going whether they win the America East or not. And that would not be a good day for these at-large teams.
In the CAA, UMass ran the table in the regular season. They will host, and they're the number one seed. They play Hofstra, and Delaware and Towson are in the other 2-3 game.
I guess you can't sleep on Towson. They've put it together after some suspensions and some adversity, but UMass has been the most consistent throughout the season. So, but I mean, is this the type of situation? Who's UMass? UMass plays Hofstra.
Hofstra,
watch out for the Pride.
Yeah,
watch out. Look out. You know. Upset alert.
I'm going to go with the favorite there, too. Home team. I'll take UMass.
Way to go out on a limb. Thrill seeker Dan Flynn.
In the Big East, Denver will play Marquette, and Villanova plays Georgetown.
It's got to be Denver, right?
Yeah.
And this is the year? Is this the year?
Is this the year that Denver can finally break through and win the Big East championship?
Yeah, I expect the Denver-Villanova championship game. You know, the Wildcats are interesting. 10-4, RPI of 10, wins over Penn State, Penn, and Yale. First game of the season for the Bulldogs, but Villanova got the dub, and they are going to be strongly considered. If they lose first round against Georgetown in the Big East tournament, I think they might be toast. But if they can get to that championship game, watch out.
In the Southern Conference, Richmond plays Furman. Richmond's the number one seed and hosting that. High Point will play Jacksonville.
One bid conference. You know, Jacksonville had some early success. Richmond's been the most consistent team throughout conference play. Furman was a little snake bitten early in the season. They turned it around and got some conference wins. And then High Point, similarly, they've done well in conference. So, should be a good tournament.
Should be really good. We have some special rooting interest in the High Point Jacksonville game. So Megan's brother, Colin Clothier, plays for High Point, and our intern last summer, Sean Ewart, is a senior tackman at Jacksonville.
Mm. So who are you taking then?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm going to take Jacksonville.
All right.
Jacksonville, the upset. I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see the Dolphins get to the NCAA tournament.
Megan gives you anything to eat this week, I would have somebody else test it first.
And finally, in the Ivy League, Yale plays Penn and Brown plays Cornell. I think this is Yale's year.
I said with a lot of confidence last week that it was going to be Bucknell and Loyola in the Patriot League championship, but I still feel pretty strong. It's going to be Yale and Cornell squaring off for Ivy League supremacy.
Yeah, I think so too. So that's our what to watch this week. There's a lot of lacrosse on. Mm-hmm. You're going to be streaming a lot of games. You'll be watching Dicks on the Big Ten Network.
Belize.
You'll be catching games on ESPNU, I'm sure. But wherever you are, find the way to watch these games.
That's right.
Because next week, Dicks, next week we'll be sitting here talking about the tournament field. We'll be reviewing it.
You believe it.
The bracket will be out. We'll know where the first round games are. Man.
Crazy.
It comes at you fast.
Comes at you fast. Comes at you hard. You got to be ready. You got to be hydrated. Right?
Yeah.
Keep staring at this Trimeno bottle.
All right. So we're going to do another combined listener call, give and go.
We're going to merge the two.
Well, we keep having listeners who call in with great ideas for give and goes.
Go ahead.
And I want to thank everybody for their restaurant recommendations. Restaurant recommendations last year.
Last year, dude, come on. Get it together.
I want to thank everyone.
Dude, we're approaching the postseason.
I know. I need to be
on top
of my game.
You're supposed to be playing at your best, and right now, you're trash. You have got to get it together, Dan Flynn. This is what we've worked all season for. This is what we practiced for. This is what we ran for in the offseason. This is what we lifted for. If you want someone else to take it, keep playing, keep acting, keep broadcasting the way that you're broadcasting. But if you want it, you have got to pick it up. No one can do it. I can't do it for you. You've got to do it. Let's go.
Wow. I'm inspired now.
How'd you like that?
Restaurant recommendations.
Last
week.
Good for you.
Yeah, there we go.
Good for you. Way to learn from your mistakes.
I want to give a shout out to Scott Hensley, at Scott Hensley on Twitter. Have you ever been to a place called Of Love and Regret in Brewers Hill?
No.
Me neither, but it came up a few times from listener recommendations. Mm. I got to try this place out. Same with Be More Biroteca.
I've heard of Biroteca. So Brewers Hill.
Of Love and Regret was another guy named at AIIRNS 1742, Anirban Mitra, recommended that place as well.
Hmm. What is the Fort McHenry area considered? Is that Bolton Hill?
Locust Point.
That's Locust Point.
Yeah.
Because I've been up there. I've been to the wine market up there.
Bolton Hill's like over by the hospital, the Hopkins Hospital.
Okay. Gotcha.
I think it's between Fells Point and Hopkins Hospital.
Okay.
Could be wrong about that.
But I've been, if the Fort McHenry area is Locust Point, that's LP Steamers is up there.
Yeah, that's over there.
That's a good place. Yeah. And then the
City Limits.
Wine Market is a place I've gone a few times.
That place is legit.
But I think it's, if it isn't closed, it is closing. Unfortunately, the wine market is closing. It sucks. It's a great place. I saw it in the paper a few weeks ago that the wine market is shuttering its doors.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it's a great place.
That is too bad.
I just didn't want to tout it and then have people go and...
And look for it.
Well, it's depressing, too, when you make a restaurant recommendation and you show up and there's, you know, close sign on the door. Closed permanently.
Nobody goes there anymore because they couldn't get in. Mm-hmm. It was too crowded.
You can't get past the rope, the velvet rope.
It's too crowded. They just decided they can't go there anymore.
Right.
All right, so here is this week's call. It's from Ed Casillas, who's a new fan of lacrosse, calling from Colorado.
Okay.
Here's Ed's call.
Hello, my name is Ed Casillas, and I'm calling from Colorado. Being fairly new to the lacrosse map, I'm wondering if you could tell me, with your lacrosse pedigree of Hopkins, who you think the top three offensive and defensive players are in Hopkins history, and then pare that down to the top three of all time. Thank you.
All right, so Ed is a Hopkins fan, and he wants to know who the three best offensive players are and who the three best defenders are in Hopkins history.
Wow.
That's tough.
That's a loaded question.
It is. Are you prepared to try to answer this?
I could try. Yeah, sure. Try.
And then narrow that down to maybe the overall three best players in Hopkins history.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, I'm going to take a stab at it.
Go ahead.
So I'll give you my give and go. We'll start with the offensive players.
Why don't you go offense, I go defense.
I'd rather do defense.
You'd rather do defense, okay. I'll do offense.
I'll do defense.
Go ahead.
All right, so I narrowed it down to, now again, neither of us have seen all of these people play. Hopkins has a long and storied lacrosse tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some guys who played a long time ago who were the man. Mm-hmm. And they're just not household names, but they were all Americans multiple times. They were great players, and people who played with them or saw them play say that they were great. So I have my list. There's three defenders and one goalie in particular.
All right.
And I got to narrow that down to three.
Will you just go and do it already?
I have Lloyd Bunting, the class of 1950, the greatest Hopkins lacrosse
smoker
team.
Every single year. You do the round robin introducing yourself. Lloyd Bunting and Tom Goff would stand up every year. This is Tommy Goff, class of 1950. And everybody, like when I first went to the smoker, I didn't know, but by that time it became a running joke. And it'd be like, we know, best team ever. And
yeah.
That was good.
So I think the 1950 Hopkins team, I think every person on the starting like 10 were All-Americans. Lloyd Bunting was a first-team All-American as a freshman. Mm-hmm. Honorable mention as a sophomore. I think he was injured. But then first team as a junior and senior. And he was a big guy.
Yeah.
In 2003.
Yeah.
You know, just the kind of guy that he would have been good anywhere.
He used to intimidate you when he would do the Blue Jays Unlimited
just a
activities.
Nice guy. Really nice guy.
Rip you up.
My second defender, Mark Greenberg. Mm-hmm. You know, he was an All-American three times, first team, played in the late 70s,
mm-hmm.
was also the National Player of the Year,
yep.
his senior, I think. My next guy is Dave Petromala.
Mm-hmm.
Many consider him to be possibly the greatest defender who ever played lacrosse. Certainly has to make this list. And then I'm going to throw our guy Larry Quinn on there to pick from. Larry was a two-time Player of the Year, first team All-American twice, probably the best goalie that Hopkins has ever had. And there's been a lot of good goalies at Hopkins too. And of those three, I'll take Bunting, Petromala, and Quinn. I just don't know Mark Greenberg personally.
Greens
never met him.
Greens is
I don't think
player.
I have met him. I know he was. And I'm talking, these are the all times.
Yep.
And I'll take Bunting, Petromala, and Quinn as my three best Hopkins defenders of all time. Your turn.
I can't argue with any of that. So for this exercise, in just getting the question, the first thing you do is you pop open the Hopkins men's lacrosse record book, and Ernie LaRosa does an incredible job of keeping history, and you go right to the guys who have won the Enners Award, and that is the Outstanding Player in Division I Lacrosse. First awarded in 1969, so obviously you can't have Lloyd Bunting in there because he was 1950. But Hopkins has had Joe Cowan, an attackman, Rich Kowalczyk, a midfielder, Michael O'Neill, an attackman. This is 1969, 74, 78, 79, Greenberg, defender, 80, Brendan Schneck, midi, 81, Jeff Cook, attackman. Two-time winner, 84, 85, Larry Quinn in the goal, 89, Dave Petromala on defense. 1995, my teammate, Terry Reardon, an attackman. And then 2005, Kyle Harrison, a midfielder. So those are all the Enners Award winners throughout the history of Johns Hopkins lacrosse. Names you don't hear in there, Paul Rabel, who had an amazing career at Johns Hopkins. Brian Pecola, number two on the all-time scoring list behind Terry Reardon. I mean, the list goes on and on. Then you can drill down into the position awards. I mean, you talk about the Kelly Award given to the outstanding goalies, the Smizer for outstanding defenders.
Did Del Dressel ever win the Enners Award?
Del never won the.
It was
Del Dressel. Brian Wood never won the Enners.
AJ Hogan.
Del
Dressel was a four-time first-team All-American.
Four-time first-team All-American and never won the Enners. Yeah. Go figure. But I'm not copping out. I can't disagree with anything that you said. I played against Greenberg in an alumni game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I played against Mark. And I know, we're not. He's involved with the program, and he's a super-duper nice guy. And he played in front of Mike Federico, who won the...
It was a
Kelly Award for...
They won three national championships.
Well,
right?
Federico won the Kelly Award 3 years in a row,
yeah.
78, 79, and 80. When you talk about the...
That's a great lacrosse family.
Unbelievable lacrosse family. Greenberg won the Smizer in 79 and 80, so he's a two-time Smizer Award winner. Dave Petromala won it twice, 88 and 89. Tucker Durkin won it twice, 2012, 2013. Hank Kastner, two-time winner back in 1966, 1967. I take back what I said about Lloyd Bunting. In 1949, he won the Schmeisser. So the Schmeisser was established in 1942. So you do have that precedent. But I can't go against what you said. Mark Greenberg, Dave Petromala, Larry Quinn. Three greatest defensive players in the history of Johns Hopkins lacrosse.
All right.
Without a doubt.
All right, your turn to start with the offense.
Offense is, a lot of goal scorers, a lot of great players in the history of Johns Hopkins lacrosse. I'm going to start off. Man, this is hard. This is really hard.
Because defense, it's, you know, there's basically three defenders and goalie. And that's four guys on a team. And that leaves the other six offensive type of players.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more names and more guys.
First national championship recognized by the NCAA championships. First NCAA championship won by Johns Hopkins, I believe, was 1974. And that, coincidentally, was Bob Scott's last year as head coach. He was led... That team was led by a player by the name of Jack Thomas. Jack Thomas, incredible. Two-time Turnbull Award winner. And the Turnbull Award is given to the nation's best attackman. So you got Jack Thomas. Michael O'Neill is a two-time Turnbull Award winner, 77-78, and then Jeff Cook, 81-82. Jeff Cook, who has passed away several years ago, when I was a kid, we used to go to the Bob Scott lacrosse camp. It was at Gilman every summer. And guys like Jeff Cook and Jack Thomas and, you named it, Del Dressel, Mark Greenberg. I don't think – that was like that's one thing that Larry, among all the accomplishments that Larry's had as a lacrosse player and as a Johns Hopkins Blue Jay, he never worked the Bob Scott lacrosse camp. He said, I never got invited by Scotty. But that was just such a thrill back then. That's when I first met Don Zimmerman, who eventually recruited me to Johns Hopkins to play lacrosse. Fred Smith, the defensive coordinator at Johns Hopkins, was there. I look back on that, and I'm just like, this is Henry Ciccarone, the former coach who's no longer with us, would be at that camp. It was unbelievable, the people that would come out and be your instructors and just teach you the game. And that was when you went to lacrosse camp to have fun and get better. That was a really, really special time. My father used to take my brother and I every year. But, I mean, you want to boil it down. Jeez, that's hard. You know, what Kyle Harrison meant to Johns Hopkins lacrosse, Paul Rabel meant to Johns Hopkins lacrosse. But I think you got to go. For me, Jeff Cook is there. I'm trying to think. 80 and the years that he won the Turnbull Award – North Carolina won those championships in 81, 82, the first two championships in the history of Carolina. Because then 83 was Syracuse, their first ever championship. Then 84, 85 was Hopkins. And but Jeff Cook was an incredible player and a special player. It's hard for me not to say Terry Reardon, but I really can't say Terry without saying Brian Pakola, because the two of them just went together like peanut butter and jelly.
Who was better?
Man, they were different. They were different. Terry was.
I don't
the,
expect you to answer that.
No, listen. Terry was the big, long shooter who developed into a Dodger.
Yeah, Terry was 6'7", left-handed.
I think he was 6'7". I mean, it was just Paul Bunyan. He's getting older. He's getting taller as he gets older. No, Terry's like 6'5". But, you know, you're not far off. But Pakola's one of the toughest, if not the toughest, lacrosse players I've ever played with. He was a Dodger who was physical. Like he would beat up defensemen. I can't tell you how many defensemen I've talked to through the years at Cover Pick that said, after I played Pakola, I was sore. I had bruises. And that's not him slashing. He would slash you, but that's not him That's him dodging. You know, with his body, getting his shoulder in on you, and then he was just such a good finisher. You know, and a feeder, quite honestly. So, those two together, unbelievable. But you know, they have the same problem that I have, and that, you know, we never won a national championship. So should that be a factor? I'm not really sure. I'm hemming and hawing. I know, big time. So I think you just have to look at the winners of the enters, and that's, I'll go Jeff Cook. I'll go Michael O'Neill. And then, you know, I'll take a midfielder, Kyle Harrison. He did so much for that team in addition to just scoring you know, he faced off, he played defense, he cleared, he did a lot of different things. And his class, when you talk about Kyle Harrison's class, Tom Garvey, Chris Watson,
Benson Irwin,
Peter Lesore,
Kyle Barry
was in there. Like that was a class that kind of got Hopkins back into that, you know, elite status. Does that make
it was
sense?
One of Petro's first recruiting classes.
Yeah, yeah, and they're all on the all-time team. I'll go Harrison. I'll go Kyle Harrison.
Can't go wrong with that choice. He's still playing. He graduated in 2005.
There's so many great players, though. So many great players. And Harrison was the face of the team when they won the 2005 National Championship that snapped the drought. Hopkins had not won since 1987. But look, Brian Wood, I love watching Brian Wood play when I grew up. I mean, that 84 championship game at Delaware where he knocked the microphone out of the corner of the goal, not once but twice. It was an ESPN broadcast. That stuff of legend. It's unbelievable.
Do I have to go now?
Yeah, I mean,
it's tough.
I only took 20 minutes, so
it's tough. A couple of older guys who I'm going to throw out there: Mickey Webster, Billy Morrill, Buzzy Budnitz.
You're going way back.
Those
way
guys
back.
All played in the 50s and were
well.
Great
one
players.
Of the four. One of the was it? Is it Jack? It's Jack Turnbull, who the Turnbull Award is named for. Was a four-time, the first four-time All-American player in the history of college lacrosse. He's a Hopkins.
There haven't been many of those guys.
Yeah, Jack Turnbull. Yeah.
I'm going to try to do this. All the guys you said had great careers for sure, but I'll go with Joe Cowan, Mike O'Neill, and Cal Harrison.
Harrison is also the only Tourton Trophy winner in the history of Johns Hopkins lacrosse.
But there's only, when did they start the Tourton?
2005.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, 2001. 2001. I apologize.
But yeah, I'll go Cowan, O'Neill, and Harrison, which is tough because there's a lot of, man.
We could be here all day.
We could be.
Talking about the legends of Johns Hopkins lacrosse.
But thank you, Ed, for your call.
Excellent
call.
You
gave us a prompt to talk more about Hopkins a week.
Like Dan
just
Flynn.
Just days after
like
they
Dan
get beat
Flynn,
by
Maryland. Like Dan Flynn
Maryland
needs any excuse to do that.
No, that's it was a fun experience. All right. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, leave a rating on iTunes or your listening platform, and share it with a friend. Please pass this along to someone else who loves lacrosse, likes to hear a couple of old guys banter.
You calling old?
You can reach out to us on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse and at @D_FLY or via email. You can get me at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. And don't forget, call in, just like Ed did. Call in with your rant, your comments, your questions, your hypotheticals. 443-595-7020. 443-595-7020. We're going to definitely want to hear what you guys think about the bracket and snubs, who made it, who didn't, in next week's podcast for sure. So please give us a call. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts here. We drop a new one every weekday now during the season. Have a great week and enjoy all those games.